One, two. All right, we're in business. Welcome, everyone, for our Agile session here. We'll try to keep the culture of Agile and the way we're going to conduct the session in a culture of Agile. And we won't be that quick and ad hoc, though, but we'll try to formalize everything in a way that we envisioned and we implemented Agile in one of the organizations. And let me just get started. My name is Alexander Rodov, and I represent and I am trusted IT group. I'm managing partner and work with EPM clients and making their life easier and making their implementations smoother and in line with business. Matthias Ebinger, he's my client, New York Presbyterian Hospital. We'll talk about the business side of the things as far as Agile. And today we're going to cover Agile project management. We're gonna talk quickly about what is Agile, if someone here in this audience is not familiar. By the way, can you please raise your hand who is now practicing Agile methodology in your organization? Good. Can you please raise who is not familiar with Agile and not practicing anything currently and maybe thinking about practicing that Agile methodology? All right, so we have a good amount of, a fair amount of audience here already familiar with the Agile, and we'll be talking about some of the aspects of the business application of the Agile methodology and how we translated it down to the project management framework and down to the working with teams, working with the Agile methodology. Deep dive into Agile in the MS Project Server. This is where we're going to talk about how exactly we configured, how exactly the processes laid out into the configuration of the MS Project and Project Server. Matthias is going to talk about, you know, what's the business value, what's the business value add of managing Agile in the MS Project Server and how we did it. We're going to talk about reports and dashboards. I'll be honest with you, we'll be talking about it fairly quickly. And then we're going to talk about capabilities, requirements, and readiness. This is where we get into the more kind of strategic discussion. All right. And I'll, at this point, hand it over to Matthias. Matthias Ebinger. Again, he's with New York Presbyterian Hospital in New York City. And Matthias, I'll give it to you.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Yeah, take this.
Before I start, I also would like to get a sense of who we have here in the room. If you are a client using Microsoft Project today, I would like you to raise the hands. Those of you who are clients, so we have about two-thirds of clients. Those who are clients, how many of you are actually not within the IT department but working for a different department? Raise your hands. Okay, so we have a couple of people. I am one of you. I work for a big hospital in New York, in New York City. I'm a client. I am not with the IT department. I am actually working with the facilities department. New York Presbyterian, for those of you who live on the East Coast in the New York City area, probably know the hospital. It's a very, very big place. We do a lot of work in construction. We are the largest hospital in Manhattan, and we build about $200 million worth of projects. Every year we renovate spaces, we build new spaces, we build new buildings, we demolish buildings. We have about 15 major software applications in the facilities arena that help us to run our business, you know, manage our assets, manage our construction projects. And one of the very important software packages that we have is Microsoft Project, because we need to make sure that projects are delivered on schedule. You know, New Yorkers, they are very time sensitive, as you may know. And so scheduling is very important for us. And the context within which we operate and within which we implemented Agile is really a context of PPM. So we do portfolio management quite well. We do project management very religiously. And within that context, we started looking at Agile methods. We have a group of about 10 people who support all of those 15 applications. And you know, so we are a little bit of an IT group, even though two-thirds of those 10 people are really business analysts. They have a background in construction or in maintenance and operations, and one-third of them are IT people. And we were asked a couple of years ago to transform the traditional facilities and maintenance business into a data-driven environment. You know, doctors, they work with numbers. We deal with doctors every day. They have beautiful charts, they have graphs, they have metrics. And we wanted that too in facilities. And to get from a traditional environment, you know, maturity level two, we know very, very well what we do, but if people retire, all the knowledge goes away with them, to maturity level three, to have automated systems, and then eventually have business data that can help us to improve our business. That was quite a challenge for us, and that's where our group comes in, 10 people to basically implement systems, but really what we were asked to do is to transform the department to become a data-driven team. Now, most of the projects that we were asked to do are fairly straightforward, and my typical answer usually is, yes, we can do it within 2 weeks, and I became known as Mr. 2 Weeks. And what happened, I promised 2 weeks because usually the problems are fairly straightforward. We have spent a lot of time and money on IT systems. We have a very, very good environment. Delivering projects in 2 weeks is not a problem, but if you have many of them, and you know, we had typically about 40 projects that we were working on, you know, IT projects, really business improvements projects. If you have 40 of them that you have to juggle at any point in time, you just don't really deliver any of them really well. So, you know, yes, we can deliver projects. We did deliver projects quite well, but we really had a hard time with projects coming and going and happening concurrently to not suddenly lose track of a project and then six months later come back and suddenly realize, you know, we promised this to be done within 2 weeks. Suddenly it's 6 months later and we are still not really done, even though it's not a very big deal. So what we needed was a methodology that would help us deliver projects more effectively. And really what this means to us, and I think most of you are very familiar, you know, if you have a background in Agile, really the idea of Agile is you wanna tie what you do much closer to the business value. We wanna generate value. And specifically what this means, you wanna make sure you understand how and what the executive thinks. And so we wanted to make sure we connect our work very closely with the goals and the needs of our clients. So we engaged Alex, we engaged the Instoa team, a consulting firm, and they had Alex on board. We have Instoa people here. Mo, raise your hand. A team that has worked with us for a long time and that had implemented Agile a couple of years before us, and we saw how they were doing. We were not really sure if Agile would be working for us because we are really not a software shop. We are, you know, real construction, design and construction. Construction, as you all know, you don't want to do Agile because it's very, very, it's not a good idea to design a building and then towards the end just really change course. So we looked at Agile, and what I found very interesting at the definition of Agile is while it's really something that is very well adopted and understood within the IT department, it is used within engineering and it is used within new product and service development. So we became curious, and as you know, once we looked at the Agile manifesto, we really fell in love with this. This is a beautiful piece of work. IT people have something poetic about them, and I thought this is really beautiful. Who of you is familiar with the manifesto? Okay, so about half of the room. What I really liked about it is, you know, if you look at this and just at the main bullet points in the center, the four lines, you know, we value individuals and interactions over processes and tools. I love processes and tools. That's what my job is. That's how I make my daily living. But really what I've realized is if people don't appreciate it, if people don't really use it, any process and any tool is not really gonna deliver the value that it's supposed to deliver. Working software over comprehensive documentation, customer collaboration over contract negotiation, responding to change over following a plan. Again, I love plans, I love roadmaps. I am from Germany, I've lived in New York. I love plans, you know, so being organized is something that I really appreciate. But what I came to understand and to appreciate with Agile is that really everything that you do should be very closely connected, should have a strong human connection, should be connected to the real need and the pain points of your clients. So what we did was we adopted the Enstoa Agile methodology, which I've learned this in Agile. You can, you know, while there are some common terms, there's still a lot of concepts and terms that are used interchangeably. So the way we called our Agile environment is basically we have sprints that are 90-day periods that are tied to the calendar year. So very clear, you know, like every quarter you have something that you deliver, that you deliver back to your executives. Those sprints we break into, they are 12 weeks long, so we break them into iterations, 6 iterations of 2 weeks each. And then within the iterations, we have daily scrum meetings or huddles where we basically connect 10 times, you know, we have 10 work dates within 2 weeks. We connect 10 times with our team that is actually delivering or working on the initiative. So if you do the math, we have about 10 to 15 initiatives that happen at any point in time within a quarter. We have 6 iterations for each of them. So if you tally up the number of scrum meetings that we have, we are within every quarter, we have about 600 to 800 scrum meetings. And what I feel, if you have so many meetings where people get together and talk to each other, no matter what methodology you use, you'll be successful. So what I really like about Agile is it makes people talk to each other, it makes people communicate, and it gives you a very clear framework to have team members communicate with each other and then have whatever they produce tie back to what the client really needs. So that's the overall framework. The sprint is basically, as I was saying earlier, without going into too much detail, is defined by a sprint charter. So, you know, again, we are a traditional project environment. We love charters. So we do a charter at the beginning of the sprint. And I'm going to show you a couple of examples of a charter later of how that works. But we identify goals. So specifically, what do we want to deliver? And then we also identify benefits. What will that do to the business in the long run? We also, very importantly, identify who sponsors it. So there has to be somebody from the executives that takes ownership. And then who are our subject matter experts? Those goals then get translated into an iteration plan. I'm going to show you an example. So the idea is, you know, we have goals that we want to deliver within the 90 days. But then within each iteration we want to have, after 2 weeks, we want to have a specific deliverable that adds value to our client. So the iteration is also very well organized. We start out with a planning huddle. So we look at the last iteration, what worked, what didn't work, what do we want to do this time within the next 2 weeks. That's at the execution level. So the development team gets together. They plan 1 to 2 hours. Then we execute it. It's very important for us to always have a demonstration to our clients so that they can see what we have done, that we get feedback. Even if we only have something that is half finished, we want to get it in front of our clients to get feedback. And then at the end of our sprint, we have the retrospective, which often melds together with the planning phase. So it's really important for us to say what worked, what didn't work, and to constantly calibrate, are we on the right track? Do we have the right methods? Do we have the right resources to be successful? And then the scrum, the daily scrum call, the lowest level of the agile environment, you know, giving us structure. That is where we have the work happen. So the parties here is obviously our team members, which are developers and designers, anybody who has some stake in the project on the technical side. We have a scrum master attending and running the sprint or the huddle, depending on what you call it. The scrum master is the person who enforces the process. The scrum master makes sure people attend, that the agenda is followed, that we don't spend more than 5 to 10 minutes in that meeting. If a conversation becomes longer, the scrum master then suggests to the developers to defer the conversation to after the scrum call. We have a product owner. So in our context, we define product owner as being somebody who is representing the client but is still on our side. So it's a business analyst. So we have for every initiative that we do, we have a product owner. And that product owner is the link between us as a technical team and the client. So the product owner is a business analyst. We do not have the client attend the Scrum meetings. We've tried it. They come for the first two, three meetings, and then they say, you know, we don't understand it. It's too much time. You guys figure it out. So it's important that the product owner and the client is really close and that the product owner has a good relationship. Very important for that daily Scrum call. So imagine within a quarter, with a fairly small group, we have about 600 to 800 calls. It has to be very short. Everybody has to be on time, and you have to be very organized. Otherwise, it's really a waste of time. What we have done with our huddles is, because we have 10 initiatives and there's a lot of overlap with resources, we lump them together. So we have 10 concurrent kind of projects that we run our initiatives, and then we have about 3 to 4 huddles. And we actually have our Scrum Master reassess at the beginning of every iteration who needs to attend the Scrum meetings, so that you really only have people attending the Scrum meetings who have a stake in it. Okay, now what I find very important overall with this now very structured environment is that you tie whatever you deliver back to the client. And the way this works is, you know, going through the quarterly cycle, this is now building up the quarterly cycle. You start with a meeting with, in our context, with the senior vice president and the vice presidents. And we go into the meeting prepared with what we believe, and with me I mean, you know, the technical team, and our business analyst, what we believe the business needs in terms to, you know, to get to the next level. So we go in with a list of, you know, 10, 15 projects. We find that about 90% of the projects get approved, and, you know, 10%, they either, because now all the VPs and the SVP are together in a room, they either come up with a new project or they tweak something because they have an opportunity to talk together. But typically what I find interesting is the backlog that we understand and that we know as technical people is a very good indication that it's pretty much in line with what the business wants. And it just gets tweaked, and those final tweaks is really where our executives take us in a certain direction. So we are very strict about getting leadership approval, and once that scope is locked in, we try not to deviate from it. We have our 3-month sprint execution, and we take the first 2 weeks to just plan. So we basically make the product owner sit down with the development team as well as with the clients to specifically translate what those high-level business goals mean in terms of specific deliverables. So 2 weeks of planning, and at the end of the 2 weeks we have our charter, and I'll show you in the next slide how that charter looks like, because I think that's very important. And then we execute. At the end of that quarterly period, and that kind of overlaps with the kickoff meeting for the next sprint, we go back to our executives and we ask them to assess whether we delivered what we promised. So we have a list of deliverables, very specific, and so we are asking our sponsors and our subject matter experts, did you actually get what you expected to get? And that's very important because we want to be held accountable for what we do, and we want the ownership of kind of auditing, or the ownership of the improvements really be with the business side. So very important, we want to make sure that the sponsor makes a statement, yes, I got it, yes, I didn't get it. You probably know, typically VPs, they, as long as something happens, in many cases, they are just fine. But what we want to do is we want the VPs to own it, and we want the VP to really have a stake in it, and the VP to say at the end, I wanted it and I got it, or I wanted it and I didn't get it for X, Y, and Z. And then we can really dig into the reasons and find out why did we not deliver the value that we wanted to deliver. One thing that is very important to us is 6 months later, we come back and talk about the same scope again with the same team, the sponsor in VP level, as well as the subject matter expert. And we ask them, did you really get the change that you expected? Just giving people a tool, you know, as we all know, we had a very good presentation yesterday with the Gartner team. And if you were in that presentation, they had a couple of statistics, you know, what was it, 40% of projects don't really achieve what they are set out to achieve. And we see this a lot. People are fine with getting tools, but really changing the culture and adopting the tools to how they run the business is a very different story. And so we feel we own the problem, not just with the tool, but we also own the adoption of the tool. We also own the transformation of the business to use the tool and to actually derive value from it. So 6 months later, we ask a very simple question. You know, we stated benefits that we wanted to get out of it. Did you actually think that those benefits were realized? So very, very simple question. The area where all of this becomes practical and is tied together is the charter document. We have a SharePoint page, and on the SharePoint page we have a template, and so every product owner at the beginning, when the product owner has been assigned to an initiative, you know, high level scope is defined, the product owner develops the charter. And what is very important on the charter is that we define tangible outcomes. You know, typically, ideally, not more than 4 or 5. You know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to train you. We're going to give you a feature set. We're going to give you metrics. And that's what we will measure right at the end of our sprint. The second thing that we put a lot of emphasis on is let's be clear on what we want to improve, what value we want to add to the business. This is hard to read, but if you are able to read it, you would find that this is probably not as quantitative as we would probably want it. You know, we would want to take a Six Sigma approach where we want to establish the benchmark as of today, and then kind of be very clear on what improvement we want to have. But what we found is that we can keep it very simple at the beginning. We can just say, what do you hope to get out of it? And you know, let's kind of formulate what that should be. And typically you would get your executives at the end give you a good answer, a fair answer. Yes, you know, we got what we wanted, not quite yet, or maybe not at all. And then it's a really interesting conversation to ask why not. You know, did we not deliver as the technical team? What did we understand? Did we misunderstand the problem? Or was there something else that was not within our control? The next thing that we define, and that goes back to, you know, a very traditional project management, we want to be very clear on who sponsors the project, who are our focal points, subject matter experts, and who is our technical resource pool. So once that is defined, then we take our goals, the specific deliverables, and on page 2, we break it down. This is still very low tech. This is Microsoft Word with a table, right, saved on SharePoint. We break it into what we call the iteration plan. So each column represents a 2-week period. And then the swim lines here, they identify the epics. You know, epics are the broad themes within a sprint that you want to achieve. So you may want to do a new feature set, and you want to, along with this, have a new set of reports be developed. So we keep them separate. So what we are doing with this is basically break the big goals and deliverables that we want to produce during our 3-month sprint. We break it into very small 2-week deliverables that are tangible. So all of those items in here, all of those items should actually produce something that we can finish. And that's the idea of time boxing within Agile. You want to be sure that you start something and you finish it. Now, something that I found really, really interesting that I would have not thought to be possible, tasks that I assigned to myself that are 4 hours, you know, that I estimate 4 hours, 5 hours, I'm suddenly able Friday afternoon to do them in 10 minutes. Because I realize, you know, that's one of the philosophies here, 80% of doing a task is usually just good enough. In many, many instances, 80% is good enough. Because if you do 100%, you have to fine tune it downstream anyway. So 80% is a good starting point. And it's pretty stunning if you want to be done within a time period, and you have a commitment to do this, and you have a scrum master who breathes down your neck to make sure you do get done. It's pretty amazing what you can finish, you know, if you really focus on it. So the epic, you know, in Agile terminology, is basically a theme that goes through the scrum. We have our user stories. So ideally, what we would like to have is at the end of every iteration, we want to have a product that our clients can do something with or get excited about. So you know, when we are done after 2 weeks, we want to go back to the client and show something. You know, this is what we did. Is this what you want? Do you like it? You know, can we do something else? Could we tweak it? And it's really nice to have that constant feedback loop and to finish something, go back, and then move on to the next step after getting directions from your clients again. So our Word file goes to the user story level. We do not go deeper here. That's what we do in Microsoft Project. So activities. Yes.
So at the iteration level, you do the assignment at the planning stage, or you do assignment as you move forward?
So we do the assignment at this level, so the way we do it is we have 2 weeks of planning, and we have everybody in the room, and we have the product owners present their iteration plan. And so we have a high-level overview of where you may need resources, and so we get an approximate idea of where we need our report writer or our BI specialist. When we go into the detail and enter into Microsoft Project, we get in Microsoft Project, obviously through the resource module, we get a very detailed analysis of how resources are utilized. And so as we go into the next step, it'll pop up. But at this level, what we were setting out at the beginning to do was to actually track hours of how long we estimated it would take. But we felt, keeping it simple, it didn't really turn out to be necessary. So Alex helped us take this approach and translate it into Microsoft Project, and I'm handing it over to Alex to walk us through the Microsoft Project implementation.
Sure. Thanks, Matthias. Well, everybody is like, okay, this is agile, so how the hell this getting into the MS Project, right? So now we're gonna dive into it and show it. But before we do this, I'd like to share some thoughts, and I hope most of you would agree with me. The concept of simple, right? What is it the most critical success factor when we implement, well, not just EPM, well, we implement a new process or implement a change? It's got to be simple enough so people would adopt it more naturally, and then we can control that process of adoption by being simple. So that was always in my mind when I worked with my clients. Just keep things simple, make sure everybody understand, and we can have a good adoption process going on. So this is exactly what we had in mind when we looked at the entire framework, Agile framework that was put together, but we didn't have tools per se to formalize it within. And then the idea was to keep it simple. So for some of you, if you're expecting to see some crazy macros or fancy clicks on the project, this is not going to happen. We kept things simple so it worked. All right, and then I'm going to show it to you. That sounds good? All right. This is basically a simple way of looking at the project center. All the projects are listed here and grouped by Scrum Master. And as you can see, you can look at the bars and the Gantt chart. Those are those 90-day sprints that Matthias was talking about, right? And if we look at the actual Agile Scrum template here, I'm going to ask you a question and see who will get the best answer, who will get something from us. I have no idea what yet, but. What is it you think is not exactly aligned with scheduling best practices here? Come on. Predecessors and successors. So what about it? Predecessors and successors. What's that? They're at the summary level. Well, they will have to come up with many prizes then. So they're at the summary level. So in order to, keep things simple, we had to think outside the box, and maybe, to make the rule, we had to break the rule. So we were thinking, what we can do and how can we massage and tailor the project to actually work with these boxed time boxes, right? And we came up with this simple framework. So when we list all the iteration, 1, iteration 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? And we put them as a milestones, and we linked them with 2 weeks lag time. And then we're simply, right? We simply link those to those summary tasks, which represent components, user story, and I'm gonna talk here. Let me just actually show it to you. So milestones here. Okay. The component and epic. This is where we put those themes, whether we need to put reports or we need to put new features, or we split in major themes of the actual scope, and then within that epic, we have those user stories, and those user stories are thrown into a iteration. So let's say I'd like to move this user story to iteration two, to iteration to the, you know, the one that's before, right? I would just change this predecessor value, which is based on the links, will push the whole user story tasks within that user story to appropriate iteration. Well, I have to admit, this is basically it. Believe it or not, the everything that comes out of it is sort of a natural scheduling. We didn't do too much of a customization, I'll be honest with you. And the implementation of this framework was fairly quick. You know, I want to put the numbers up, but you know, we had a lot of brains from the client sitting and putting this thinking together. But that's how we basically schedule our iterations. They're simply thrown into these buckets of iteration 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which is predefined, sort of hard-coded, right? And those are milestones, and we drive those user stories based on that, based on the predecessor, based on the link to a particular iteration. Simple? Pretty simple, right? And then the activity, this is where we dive into tasks, and each task would have obviously a resource. We were trying to keep it at a one person, one resource per task. Just from the Agile perspective, you know, we would like to, you know, be consistent, and most of the task would be taken care of one person. So it gets a little bit complex when you have more than one resource per task. So we were trying to establish this process. So if you need to have two people working on something, you know, on something, then create those two tasks rather than having one task and two resources. There are some adjustments that we needed to do, but those adjustments are more like process and process framework adjustments, not necessarily the tool adjustments. Activity, and now we can get to the next slide here, and this is the there's some more details about the task. I'm going to go back here a little bit. So the details about this task, all the start dates will be driven off that dependency. The duration and work estimates are basically as simple as, you know, the estimated work, we put the work numbers, and then we start progressing and updating those tasks as we go through the daily or weekly cycles. And there is a workflow column, which is a custom field with a simple drop down, where during the Scrum meetings, folks are flipping that statuses based on the actual scope. You know, so whether it's in work, whether it's done or rejected or deferred, and such and such. So this is the workflow, and this is the task list for each resource. So this is how people really update their progress and put their time that they spend on the on those tasks. And again, it's sorted by start date, so they can look at what they need to work on today. This is very straightforward, out of the box, mostly configured view, but not really customized or anything. So just a basic, really, a task update pane, right? So there's nothing here that is not compliant with my simple concept here, right? Well, although you may say, well, filling out these details every day is kind of not an easy thing to change in people's minds. But again, the entire framework will require some discipline, as Matthias was mentioning, that it will require some implementation of the framework. And here I'm just saying how simple I wanted to put this framework as far as technology side of it. I didn't want it to make it too much, you know, more complicated than it is right now. So yes, Scrum has its sprints and daily meetings, its hard work, discipline, and all that. But as far as the tool, we were trying to keep it very simple. And here's the logic is the activities. Again, activities are time boxed in these iterations. If for whatever reason activity goes beyond that, if we go back quickly, you can see where they're filling out the remaining work too. So classic, if I needed to work on a task 8 hours and I worked 8 hours, but I still need 8 hours to work on the task, so guess what, it's not going to be completed, and the total task is going to be 16 hours. So it's going to go, it may go beyond that box of that iteration, and on the Scrum meetings, you know, the Scrum Master would make a decision whether this particular feature, whether this particular task, or maybe the whole story should go to another iteration. And by flipping that switch, it's easy, fair enough, it's fairly easy to move that and schedule remaining work to that iteration. And we'll be doing an actual demo of what we're seeing here at the screenshots, so you can have a more feeling of how it's been done. And I'll be honest with you, that was kind of the first attempt to, well, not in the industry, but it's very rare when project server is used for Agile. And I was kind of skeptical whether it's really going to work. But due to Matthias's background and being very precision and organized, it worked. And this is real, and it's working. Amazing. All right. Simplify status updates, focus on workflow, and percent complete. The only two questions, the only two entries people are asked to do. How much time you worked, how much time remaining, and what is the percent complete? Again, it's fair to ask any of your team members. So we ask this question, and that gets entered into the system. So before we dive into here, we can have a couple of slides for reporting. Then this is again not a fancy customized report. Everybody, you know, I'm sure in this audience saw this at least once, or maybe working on this a daily basis. This is a resource allocation by week, and you can see in how your resource pool is really utilized, and obviously it drops as you have less stories entered into the schedules. Your utilization drops as the time goes. We have some of the mock-ups of the reports, and some of those are real. Some of those are just the mock-ups, but we wanted to show you that there is a enormous opportunity to report on the data that we're having in the system. And I know this session is not meant to be reporting per se, but it's just an example of how we can pull the data, build all kind of fancy burn down charts. We can do anything we want because the data is on the SQL Server database. We can slice and dice it the way we want it. So there is an example. In this particular example, there is a client-specific business intelligence solution that they're using to run the reports. And you can look at different histograms and Gantt chart views of how those allocations are organized. And live demo, question. You want to, Matthias, you want to take this one? It's not like, how?
How are they measured velocity?
Velocity.
So we do this as part of our Scrum cycles. So we have our Scrum Master look at the planned hours and the actual hours. And then as they, so the way we do it is in the second week of our of every iteration, we have the Scrum Master spend half a day. We have two people that right now manually compile the data and then report, basically readjust the resource needs moving forward.
So you are not doing that on daily basis?
No, we're not doing it. So what we realized, and you know, you see this is a fairly, this is very simplistic, and that was the idea.
You want to go to the slide?
Yeah, I think if you just go back to the mockups, so you know we asked Alex and his team to mock up the reports for us, and we know the data is there. We looked at the price tag and we said, you know, before we really go there, let's really understand how our process works. So you know, very sophisticated metrics is something that we haven't gotten yet to, because we really need to understand. In terms of delivery, how much we need to fine tune the process. I think what we are, you know, having done this now for a while, what we are realizing it is that just by having somebody dedicated to look at resource utilizations and avoiding gross over bookings of resources, you know, whether you are at 80% or 120%, is in our world, because we are not very precise, doesn't really make a big difference. It just means this person is really busy. You know, so you want to maybe have a conversation and find out that this person, you know, can handle it. If somebody's at 20%, you know, we know that person can take a little more. So that's this. Yeah. I know we are. The demo is between you and lunch. Are you okay if we do a demo? Okay. Okay. So what you see here is our SharePoint page, our departmental SharePoint page. We have a lot of metrics when it comes to design and construction. As I was saying, the agile world, we haven't spent too much time and energy yet on you know, really going to a maturity level 3 or 4, you know, 4 I would say, because we first really want to understand how it works. So when you, from our SharePoint environment, where we also have our, you know, like right here, we have our sprint planning. And again, you know, this is where we have our charters, very, very simple. A library with Word files and a template. You know, you are all familiar with this. That works very nicely. Now, Microsoft Project Server runs in that environment very nicely. And so when you log in, you get your project center, which for our users filters out just the projects that they, you know, my team, they only want to see the sprint initiatives. We took out all the construction projects in that view. So what we would do typically at every sprint, we would set up a filter for that initiative. So this is our current sprint 3. We have 15 initiatives. We have 3 Scrum Masters, 2 consultants, actually 2 in-house and 1 consultant Scrum Master. So these are just regular projects in my regular project files on the server. So let me open one of them. I'm going to go into the...
Matthias, yes. I have a question. So can you explain this just for quick reference?
Yes. So every system that is rigid is you know, I always say a plan is good because you can break it, right? So agile is very good because you have a structure, but if you need, you can go beyond the structure. So in this case, the facility service request was one of those cases where it just didn't fit into those 90 days. So you know, one exception, we started a little early and we tried to finish it with the, you know, to at the end have this end as part of our quarterly cycle. But again, you know, because this is Microsoft project, and you can move your schedules in any direction that you want, this is very easy. You know, this can very easily be done.
Sorry, I know we didn't plan this question, but thank you for answering.
Yeah, no, this is good. So let me go into one project. And again, this is all out of the box capability. My VPN is on, yes. Mm-hmm. So the normal view that I would typically see when I log in here is my outline view level 2. And these are the user stories. So I have in this project, I have, let's see, I have 5 epics, and I see all my user stories. And if I adjust my view here, I see how those user stories tie into my iterations. So if I hide my milestones, it becomes a very clean view. When we have our Scrum meetings, we have the Scrum Master open the plan before the call so that it's very efficient. So they have different tabs. They actually go to a view called active tasks. We filter to show tasks that are either in the workflow, that are either within a time window or have an active workflow. So, you know, if it's a task that hasn't been completed, or if it's within our time window, that task will show up here. And so then during the meeting, our Scrum Master, and this is very, very fast, basically, you know, goes either, there are two ways, either you ask your team members very quickly, you know, what are your issues, what are your inhibitors, what can we do to make sure that you are productive, or, and that's typically what we do, you go task by task and you have a very quick update from every team member. We do WebEx calls because we work in different locations. And so you very quickly just update the workflow status. And so we are now, this is now in edit mode, so I can quickly show you how this works. But again, as Alex said, this is pretty much all out of the box with, you know, with some minor configurations, no customization whatsoever. This is on our premises, so, you know, in our environment, this usually performs. This usually is not an issue. So here, you know, if I'm the Scrum Master and I go task by task, I can change this very quickly. I can then validate here how, you know, what the percentage of hours are that were submitted, and so very quickly I can challenge my team and say, you know, like, you are reporting that you are done with your task, but I see 0 hours reported, and so you have a very quick cross check, and you know that. That helped our team. It was quite an adjustment from our traditional way of doing business, adjusting to agile, for the team to go to the Scrum meetings every day. There was a bit of a lift, and then also for the team to daily report their hours. Now, we are not really interested in precision here. We just want to know that the team is working on the task, whether they worked half an hour or an hour and a half. We don't really care. We just want to know they worked on it. When I'm going to open my task list here, when I get an email in the morning, I'm on the train, I have half an hour train ride, I go through my task list and I can pretty much plan my day and see, you know, which tasks, it's an email that I get, which tasks are on my plate and who do I need to coordinate with. And so, you know, it's a very effective way of starting the day. And then at the end of the day, I very quickly go in here and as Alex mentioned earlier, out of the box, the grouping is organized, you know, in your task list, in our example here by project, and then we sort it by task start date. And so what you see here is that I immediately see 2 tasks that I am late with, and then those tasks here, you know, are now in this current iteration. So I did some work this morning, you know, waking up on East Coast time, did 4 hours worth of work, you know, submitted, and now the product owner knows that there has been some movement. They get an email right away. You know, they receive the tasks and they accept them in the approval center. And so there is, through the task update, there is a communication between the team member and the product owner who owns the Microsoft project file that is very effective. So as I was mentioning, the Scrum meetings, you know, they basically are very effective meetings to go through open tasks. We do a status update. Typically, we are able to do them within 5 minutes. And if we have follow-up conversations, if we need to coordinate, we reserve an hour afterwards where there are no meetings so that team members can stay on the line after the Scrum call and resolve open issues. I guess you guys are probably familiar with the Resource Center. That's what we are using right now. As I was saying earlier, we are not yet doing custom reporting because the Resource Center serves our needs for now. So you have a view where you see per person what the what the team members are assigned to. So I see all the projects where Christine from our team is currently allocated. I see planned hours and I see actual hours. And so if I see that somebody's over allocated, I can very very quickly go in here and I can see what the source of the over allocation is. So we have the Scrum Master do this on a biweekly basis, to do an in-depth analysis of our resource loading. Now I think to kind of summarize the approach here, we were a construction environment. Our developers and our technical resources, they were used working with Microsoft Project before. We did not have a development environment that came up with their own methodology and with their own product. We have one team working for us, one consultant team that uses a Scrum, an agile tool. And what we do is we have them run their initiatives in their tool, and then they have one focal point that then goes into our system and updates the user story at the user story level. So in that context, if a firm has their own tool, that integration works quite well manually. So that's the overview. Alex, do you wanna go through your last slide and summarize?
Basically, we wanted to just kind of quickly touch base towards the end of the session is going back to this methodology of readiness, how your organization is ready to adopt agile framework, regardless of what tools are going to be used. That's how organization is ready to do that. Is it falling into requirements? So, and is the organization is capable of adopting that? So, this when you look at this sweet spot here, you need to make sure that this sweet spot is big enough to justify changing the organization in the way they manage, in the way the projects are managed, to change it to agile. And then there are aspects of agile, and we talked about this is Scrum meetings and daily discipline and all that. Well, it discipline, even if you're using the waterfall methodology, maybe in the Scrum business there's more frequent meetings or more often you need to meet. Maybe you need to be more precise on how you update your statuses and all that. So all that comes together and. And basically, that's what I'm trying to get my clients thinking before they move to agile. And that's basically concludes our session. And we may, if we're lucky, we may cut it short maybe at some point. But let's see if we have questions. Sure.
Great, but Ken Schreiber will kill you if he sees this. Do you agree?
I'm ready to sit down at a table with this gentleman and talk about his vision, and I think we can come to a common ground at the end of the day.
Okay.
But why do you think so? Let's explain yourself.
Because you modify so much the Scrum, and by his point of view, it's not allowed. wrong approach. I'm just making a comment about Scrum as it is by Ken Schreiber. That's it.
And you know what? Have you seen Ken Schreiber on any of these slides? Have you seen this name on any of these slides? No. So, but yeah, we can. Yeah, I got your point, obviously, and you are right. And
that's I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's a matter, I think, of culture. So you know, and it would be interesting to have an in-depth conversation on this, and we can have it afterwards. I think you need to find, obviously, you need to find something that works, you know, in where you are coming from. And so this solution works in an environment that I think is open, that is very familiar with that really comes from the project world with, you know, PPM mindset, which in our context, being a construction environment, that's who we are. Yes. Yes.
But when you said it's going to kill me, that sounded scary. So thank you. I'm sorry. There was a question from that gentleman. Let me just.
Just real quick, that workflow column that you had in your template, that was a custom field that you added.
Yes, that was a custom field. Yep.
Well, I congratulate you. I think this is great. I like the simplicity and even the violation of rules and books and frameworks. This is great. You have to do things that are right for your organization, no matter whoever writes whatever. So my question is. Some of the challenges into moving into Agile is how did you handle the people who are so used to phase gates and having the where is your project at? Plan, execution, scoping, and that part. How did you handle that? Did you get any pushback on that?
I think the important piece was that we had very strong support from our senior leadership, and their main concern was that they wanted change to happen. And that, you know, the perspective of us adding value, kind of put the conversation into a framework that it was not optional. So you know, you could put it in other words, it was a top down mandate to do. So yes, we had a lot of pushback. One thing that I felt was very useful is we brought the whole team together into all day workshops for several days. Prior to each sprint, as we were planning the sprint, so everybody was in the room. Anybody who had issues could raise it there, and we would work it out together. So it was very collaborative. You know, we got the top down mandate, we got the scope items to do, and then we used our consulting firm to train us for. We had several days of agile training, so that everybody truly got it. It was interesting. A couple of people were either on vacation or sick, and those ones were the people who had a really hard time. Kind of coming along, and so it was. I felt it was very effective, making sure that people truly understood what this was about. You know, breaking it down, breaking the project down along the Scrum methodology. We are still struggling with the idea. You know, it's not a 90-day waterfall thing. It's supposed to be something different. You are supposed to have something tangible, and that's something that this is going to take time. And but I think what people do appreciate is the rigor that this methodology. Kind of on the one hand imposes, but on the other hand provides for you so that there is a lot of opportunity to resolve issues immediately as they come up.
Implementation. This is very good. So, first of all, very good. But do you have plans to adopt
Yes, yes. So I think you know, there will be limits with Microsoft Project, and I think you highlighted a very good example. You know, how are tasks assigned, and you know, kind of having self-organizing teams. That to a certain degree you can do it. So the task list allows the team to generate new tasks and to assign it to themselves, or they can assign themselves to other tasks. But there are certainly limitations. In our context, the way we are organized, and I guess that's your point. We have the product owner own the distribution of tasks primarily, and so the product owner needs to work closely with the team. And the product owner would open Microsoft Project in a thick client as they have the planning session of the iteration and would make all the team assignments there. So specifically on this comment, there's a limitation here. I think the next step for us is to focus more on resources to get better visibility and more automated, more meaningful reports that would help us to understand where we have resourcing issues.
To your point, Matthias, I just wanted to add a kind of overall maybe comment about we are still breaking rules, even those we put together, at some point. So we're kind of trying to also think in agile terms into, how can we get more value of what we're doing, right? If we need to have sprints longer or shorter, we may think about it, and if we really need to, we will do this. If we need to change, a process where we do this, how do you call it, retrospective or recalibration exercise, when we adjust our processes. So maybe not technically, but at least philosophically, we are in culture of agile and managing things the way they are meant to be by their fathers, right? Mo, you know? Yeah, but I purposely said breaking the rule because it sounds like nothing is that we have to follow religiously all the time. There are some concepts that there are some discipline, but what my point was, even though having this agile framework and ocean of things going flowing in the lower level, so to speak, we're still having good controls that rolling up the work that we're doing and planning at the business level. So business doesn't really care whether you use Agile or Waterfall, right? But it allows us to use this framework to roll it up and have control so business would understand what's going on, what's done, what's the pipeline. There's a structure, and they buy it, right? So that's my major point, that we connect that whole organization, the whole PMO into structural, although it's still agile, but still structural. So that's kind of hybrid, if you will. I hope that answers the question. Sure.
So we have different levels of reporting. To our executives, we report halfway through the sprint, and then we have a final report. And that final report is really an assessment that we ask our sponsors to conduct. So it's them reporting on us. For us, it's very important that we engage our senior management. So we want to make sure they are in the loop. That's the executive level. We do report on a biweekly basis. At the beginning of every iteration, we report to our sponsors against the deliverables that we have defined, how we are making progress. So the high level specific deliverables that we have set to be achieved during the sprint, we report progress against that. That report right now is a very simple, it's not automated. And we kind of like it this way for now, because that's our product owner reviewing at the at every 2 weeks, reviewing the status. What we found in our first sprint was that the product owners, they lost sight of what we really committed ourselves to do. So at the end, when we came back and we looked at what we had committed ourselves to do, we were about, we had about 20% of our deliverables not being achieved. And so with this method, we make sure that we always report against what the deliverables overall should be. Specifically, in coming out of Microsoft Project, we do use the resource reporting. That's an important piece for us to make sure that as our iterations are phased out, that we have our specialty resources be leveled properly.
Quickly adding to your answer, number of views, standard views and filters and groupings of those views did the job. So we're not doing a lot of customized reports, but we're utilizing a lot of views and filters and grouping of existing project center functionality that we can slice and die and see what's going on. All right, if that's all the question, well, thank you so much for attending.